All right, strap in, everyone, because today we are diving into the deep end of voter ID laws. And to really get a handle on things, we're going right to the source, straight to the Supreme Court. We're going to be looking at a landmark case, Crawford v. Marion County Election Board.
Yeah, and you know what's so interesting about this case? It really shows us this tension that's been playing out all across the U.S. Like, how do we make sure our elections are secure, but also make sure everyone who's eligible can vote? Tough question.
Oh, for sure. And that's exactly why we're going straight to the Supreme Court opinions on this one. Not just the majority decision, though. We've got the concurring and dissenting opinions, too, so we can see how the justices really wrestled with these issues.
Yeah, that's what makes it so interesting. You get to see all the different angles, different ways of looking at the law, you know?
Okay, so before we get lost in the legal weeds here, let's take a step back and set the scene. What exactly did Indiana's law do?
Right. So as their law, it was called SEA 483, and it basically said, if you want to vote in person, you got to show a government-issued photo ID. And, well, as you can imagine, that got people talking.
Yeah, I mean, it did. But it wasn't like a simple no ID, no vote situation, was it? There were some exceptions.
You're right. There were some exceptions. And those exceptions are really important for understanding what the whole debate was about. So, for example, if you voted absentee, you didn't need a photo ID. And same thing if you lived in a state-licensed facility, like a nursing home. And they also had ways for people to vote if they couldn't afford an ID or if they had a religious objection to being photographed. They could vote provisionally, and then they'd have to file like an affidavit afterward.
Okay, so it sounds like they tried to address some of the potential problems people might have.
Mm-hmm.
But it still ended up all the way at the Supreme Court. So what was the main legal issue at play here?
Well, the big question was whether these ID requirements were making it too hard for people to vote, whether it put an unconstitutional burden on the right to vote, especially for certain groups of people. And to figure that out, the court used something called the Anderson-Burdick balancing test.
Uh-oh, that sounds a little intimidating. Can you break that down for us? How does this test actually work?
Sure. It's actually not as complicated as it sounds. Basically, they look at how hard a law makes it to vote, and they weigh that against the state's reasons for having that law. So in this case, they looked at how hard it was for people to get an ID and whether that was harder than, you know, Indiana's interest in stopping voter fraud and making sure elections are fair.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So let's get into the court's decision then. Why did the majority of the justices decide to uphold Indiana's law?
Well, Justice Stevens, he wrote the majority opinion. He really focused on the state's interest in preventing voter fraud. They also talked about how the law was supposed to modernize elections and make people feel more confident about the whole process.
But hold on. From what I understand, Indiana didn't really have a history of in-person voter fraud, did they?
You know, that is a point the dissenters brought up, and it's definitely important to consider. The majority did acknowledge that there weren't a lot of proven cases of in-person voter fraud in Indiana, but they said even the potential for fraud, along with needing to modernize elections and make people trust the system more, that was enough to justify having the law.
So they were kind of looking at the bigger picture then, but what about all those burdens on individual voters that we talked about before? Did they just ignore that?
Not entirely. They said that those burdens, and I'm quoting here, were not excessively burdensome based on the evidence presented.
I'm sure the dissenters had some thoughts about that. But before we get to them, can you explain how the majority came to that conclusion? What evidence were they looking at?
Sure. They pointed to a few things. First, Indiana was offering free photo IDs for people who couldn't afford them. So they said that took care of the financial burden. And second, they said anyone who couldn't get an ID right away could just vote provisionally.
Okay. I can see why the dissenters might have a problem with that. It seems like it could be oversimplifying things a bit, you know. What did Justice Souter, one of the dissenting justices, have to say about all this?
Well, Justice Souter was really worried about how this law would affect thousands of people in Indiana in their everyday lives. He was especially concerned about older folks who might not have easy access to things like birth certificates, which you need to get an ID. And he also talked about how people living in poverty might not have reliable transportation, so getting to the BMV could be a huge problem.
Yeah, I can see how those inconveniences, as some might call them, could actually be impossible barriers for some people.
Exactly. Souter was saying that even if the state had good reasons for the law, the way it would affect these groups was just too burdensome and not justified. He also pointed out that Indiana's voter registration list was pretty messed up. Like, it had way more names on it than it should have. And the state had used that as part of their argument for why they needed this law in the first place.
Wait, so they were saying they needed this law because of a problem with their own list. That seems a little backwards.
Souter thought so too. He basically accused the state of creating a problem and then using that same problem to justify a solution. That would end up, you know, making it harder for certain people to vote.
That's a pretty serious accusation. It sounds like Justice Souter was really thinking about the individual people affected by this law, while the majority was focused more on the election system as a whole. Now we have one more dissenting opinion to look at, right? Where did Justice Breyer stand on all this?
Justice Breyer's position is interesting. It's a bit more nuanced. He actually agreed with the general idea of voter ID laws. He thought they were a valid way to prevent fraud and make people feel confident in elections.
So he liked the idea, but he had a problem with this particular law. What were his concerns?
His main issue was how the law was put into practice. He said the Indiana law made things way too hard for voters, especially compared to states like Georgia and Florida, which also had voter ID laws.
Oh, so he was using real-world examples. I like it. Can you tell us more about those other states? What did they do differently?
Okay, so both Florida and Georgia were more flexible about what kinds of ID they would accept. And they also made it easier for people to get a free ID and to vote provisionally without jumping through a bunch of hoops like Indiana. Breyer thought those states did a better job of, you know, putting voter ID laws into practice without making it too hard for people to vote.
So we have a majority focus on the state's interests, and then two dissents that are raising some serious concerns about how this affects certain voters. This is already a fascinating deep dive, but we're not done yet. We still need to talk about Justice Scalia's concurring opinion.
Yes, Justice Scalia. Always an interesting perspective. He agreed with the majority, but his reasoning was completely different.
Oh, I'm all ears.
Yeah.
Let's unpack that in part two of our deep dive. This case is really showing us just how complicated this issue is.
Yeah, so Justice Scalia, his opinion is all about letting the states do their thing. He believed courts should generally just defer to state legislatures when it comes to election rules.
So basically his view was hands off Indiana.
Pretty much, yeah. He argued that unless a state law is clearly making it unreasonably hard to vote or is intentionally discriminating against certain groups, the courts should just let state legislatures do their job.
Okay, so he's putting a lot of emphasis on state power here. But he still agreed that Indiana's law wasn't putting too much of a burden on voters.
Right. He believed the burdens were pretty minimal and that the state's interest in stopping fraud and protecting election integrity outweighed those burdens.
Hmm. That sounds familiar. Didn't the majority opinion make a similar argument?
They did, but Scalia went a step further. He said that having everyone follow the same rules, like everyone showing a photo ID, actually makes things more fair and prevents confusion and manipulation.
Interesting. So he's saying that having different rules for different people could actually cause more problems than it solves.
Exactly. He argued that keeping things uniform makes the whole voting process easier to manage and enforce.
I see. So it's about creating a level playing field, at least in theory. But what about all those concerns about disenfranchisement that the dissenters brought up? How did Scalia address those?
He basically dismissed them. He said getting a photo ID wasn't a big deal for most people, and he pointed out that Indiana was offering free IDs for those who couldn't afford them.
It seems like both the majority opinion and Scalia are downplaying the potential burden of this law, especially on certain groups, even though they got there in different ways.
You've hit on a really important point there, and it gets to the heart of what makes this case so significant. The court is struggling with a fundamental question. How much weight should we give to the possibility of voter fraud, even when there's not a lot of evidence, versus the very real burden these laws can have on some voters?
Yeah, it's a tough balancing act. Okay, so we've looked at all the different opinions in this case. We've heard the arguments for and against Indiana's voter ID law. But I'm curious, how does this specific case connect to the bigger issue of voter ID laws across the country? Did it settle the debate once and for all?
Well, the Crawford case was definitely a landmark decision, but it didn't really end the debate. It gave us a way to think about these laws, this balancing test. But the debate has kept going and evolving since then. We've seen voter ID laws passed and challenged in tons of states with different levels of success.
Right. And earlier we talked about Georgia and Florida. They both have their own versions of voter ID laws. They're good examples of how different states have tackled this issue.
For sure. Georgia, for example, they started with a really strict photo ID rule, but they've changed it since then. Florida's law is generally seen as less restrictive. They accept more types of ID and make it easier to vote provisionally.
So it seems like there's no one right answer when it comes to voter ID laws. Each state is figuring it out in its own way.
That's right. And it makes you wonder, why is this such a controversial issue? It seems like it goes deeper than just the logistics of voting.
Definitely. It feels like there's something bigger at stake. It makes me think, who are these laws really affecting? And what are the consequences, both the ones they're trying to achieve and the ones they might not be thinking about?
You're getting at a really important point. We need to consider the historical context here. You know, worries about voter fraud, whether they're real or not, have been used to justify voting laws that end up disproportionately affecting certain groups. Minorities, low-income voters, the elderly.
Are you saying these laws could be used as a way to suppress certain voters, even if that's not the intention?
It's a valid concern. We need to think about it carefully. The intention behind these laws is important, but so is the impact they have. We have to ask ourselves, who might be losing their voice because of these laws, even if that wasn't the goal?
Wow, this is getting really deep. We're talking about the core of our democracy, the right to vote, and how to protect it.
Exactly. It's a fundamental right. And that's why cases like Crawford are so important. They show us that laws that seem simple can have huge consequences, affecting different groups of people in very different ways.
Okay, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. We've really dug into this landmark case and the broader issue of voter ID laws.
Yeah, we've only scratched the surface of this complex topic, but hopefully we've given our listeners a good foundation for understanding the main arguments and the history surrounding voter ID laws.
Let's take a minute to gather our thoughts, and then we'll come back for the last part of our deep dive. We'll summarize some key takeaways and, as always, leave our listeners with something to think about. All right, we've really been down the rabbit hole with this one. I feel like I've learned a ton about voter ID laws just from breaking down that one Supreme Court case.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot to unpack, but I think we've managed to, you know, make it a little bit clearer, highlight the main points and the different perspectives.
For sure. So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's try to summarize some key takeaways for our listeners. If we had to boil it all down to just a few essential points, what would you say are the most important things to remember about Crawford v. Marion County Election Board and how it affected the whole debate about voter ID laws?
Well, I think the first thing to remember is context. The Crawford case, it gives us this framework, this balancing test. But it doesn't mean the debate is over. We have to look at each state's laws individually, the reasons they give for having them, and how those laws might affect different people.
Right. What's considered okay in one state might be totally unacceptable in another.
Exactly. And that leads us to our second key takeaway, this tension between what states can do and what individuals are entitled to. In Crawford, the Supreme Court basically said states have a lot of power to run their own elections. But the dissenting opinions remind us that we can't forget about the people who might be hurt by these laws, the ones who have a hard time getting an ID or figuring out all the rules.
Yeah, it's like walking a tightrope, finding that right balance.
Absolutely. And our third big takeaway, I think, is that we can't ignore the history of voter fraud, real or imagined, because it's been used to justify laws that end up having a bigger impact on certain communities.
It's kind of unsettling, you know, that laws meant to protect our elections could end up preventing certain people from voting.
Right. And that's why it's so important to look at the evidence, not just go with our gut feelings or what we hear from others.
This whole deep dive has definitely made me think about all this in a new way. So, as we leave our listeners to ponder all this, what's the one big question you want them to think about?
I think it comes down to this. When we talk about voter ID laws, what are we willing to sacrifice? Can we make sure elections are fair without making it harder for some people to vote? And in the end, who gets to make that decision?
Wow, that's a really powerful question. It makes us think about these issues critically and have real conversations about voting rights in our country.
Exactly. The more we know, the better we can participate in this conversation and fight for fair and accessible elections for everyone.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much for joining me on this deep dive into the wild world of voter ID laws.
It's been a pleasure.
And to all our listeners, thanks for coming along on this journey with us. Until next time, stay curious.